Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena. Finance leaders are constantly trying to stay on top of how their business is performing, from what they are seeing in the financials to the broader operational performance. In this episode, we take a closer look at the trends that have shaped FP&A and more broadly, Enterprise Performance Management, or EPM. Joining me is John Haggerty, Distinguished Analyst for Dresner Advisory Services. John has over 35 years' experience at the intersection of financials, HR, and supply chain software with planning, business intelligence, and analytics. As a former business user and as a market-leading industry analyst at Gartner and AMR Research, he worked with customers and vendors on strategies to obtain the best value from technology investments. John has also held product management leadership positions at Oracle and IBM as they transition their products to cloud architectures. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Melissa. Pleasure to be here.
So let's set the stage here because we're going to be talking a fair bit about EPM. John, can you define what EPM is?
Okay, EPM, or Enterprise Performance Management, is really made up of a component set of capabilities that really drive performance within a business. Largely focused on finance to start, EPM consists of financial planning and analysis. So it has a lot to do with budgeting, forecasting, planning. It has a lot to do with the monthly and quarterly closing process, or what's called the financial consolidations and close. And then finally, it's the area of reporting. In a lot of cases, there needs to be this way to portray results standardly throughout the business and also externally to the markets and to advisors and so forth. So it really is made up of those three different areas. And what we see is a lot of our research falls into those three areas. And in many cases, they're looked at almost independently because some people may do planning, but not consolidation. Some people may do reporting, but not planning. So it really has a lot to do with a basket of different capabilities that really drive performance within the business.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your experience and the work that you're doing with Dresner?
Certainly. So I've been in this market area for my entire career, which is over 40 years. And a lot of what I've done has been around the intersection of finance, supply chain, and workforce, and how technology relates to that kind of stuff. And I spent a lot of my career at Dun & Bradstreet, and then I spent a long stint at Gartner as an industry analyst. And I also had some time at both IBM and Oracle from the product management perspective. So I had a pretty broad experience, both in terms of somebody who designed and developed software, somebody who analyzed the market and gave advice to people about what they should be doing, and then also as a market practitioner, somebody who was selling the software to other people to use.
And then when did you join Dresner?
I joined Dresner just about a year ago. I had been on the bench, so to speak. I retired for a couple of years, and I came back out of retirement to participate in Dresner's research efforts.
EPM is just too exciting to sit it out, isn't it?
to be honest, it's true. I used to read a lot of stuff, especially on LinkedIn and other commentary, and I was always like, I think there's a different way of looking at this kind of stuff, which drew me back to this market.
Well, we're glad to have you back. And on that point, Dresner recently released their 2024 EPM market study. It was earlier this year. What were some of the key themes that came out of that?
There are really five key themes that I think everyone should think about as they look at enterprise performance management, or EPM. The first one is really how EPM is expanding very broadly throughout the business landscape. One of the things that we've seen is that the number of organizations who say they have no plans to do EPM is getting smaller and smaller year over year. So this is a steady progression. And also, people are reporting that there are more constituencies participating in the performance management view of the business. So it's getting more people. Interestingly, though, departmental deployments is still where people start. So there's a bit of a maturity model associated with the way people work with this. They start small and then grow over time. The second thing that we've seen, and it relates to this broadening perspective, is the idea of silos of information are merging much faster than they used to. I think if you look at how a lot of people have implemented enterprise performance management, they look at it as a solution to a problem. So it may be in finance, or it may be in operational planning, or it may be in workforce. And they, in many cases, would instantiate each of those independently. Now, what a lot of people have said is that in order to be able to do really dynamic planning and performance management, you have to have all the different pieces clicking together. So we're seeing a recognition that A drives B, B drives C. And so people are now merging these components back together. And as that happens, it also starts to become part of the information architecture of the entire organization. So it takes on a broader role rather than just solving a very specific use case. Kind of on that same vein, the third thing that we've seen is operational insights are really coming to the forefront. Financial plans tend to be somewhat high level, and they tend to be things that people look at as a way to drive their business strictly from a dollars and cents standpoint. But I think one of the things that we end up seeing is that folks are recognizing that things like sales planning, operations planning, supply chain, if you're in manufacturing or distribution, workforce planning, are really where a lot of the action is, because those contribute to the overall financial plan. So there is this kind of idea of linking finance performance to operational excellence. And what we really see is that a lot of companies are trying to drive these operational planning exercises to be able to get to a holistic view of the business. Now, obviously, I've saved this one to number four, but it's probably number one in a lot of people's mind, and it's the issue of AI. And one of the things that we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years is that AI continues to grow in terms of people's acceptance of it. Although there might be some skepticism associated with it, what a lot of people are doing is they're saying, you know what, I really need to be able to use the power of AI. And that could be in terms of using natural language to query data, or being able to have the system generate language-based responses. So don't just say it in numbers, but say it in English or French or German to be able to describe what's going on. And also to be able to use pretty strong machine learning-based algorithms to do better forecasting and predictions. So we're seeing a lot more in the terms of AI percolating into the enterprise performance management space. And the last one is one that I think is really looking forward to the future, is very much this idea of the impact of regulation on how an organization needs to portray itself to the outside world. I think a lot of companies who operate in many geographies recognize that each country or each geographical regulatory agency is saying that you should be doing things around environmental, social, or governance type issues. So we're seeing a lot of people really drive toward including that type of data, which is a brand new type of data for EPM, including that into the way that they report and analyze what's happening in their monthly and quarterly performance. So this is one area that we have to keep our eyes on, because as laws are put in place or regulations are put in place by governing bodies, this is going to be something people have to address. So those five things: EPM expanding, silos of information collapsing, operational insights moving to the forefront, AI really becoming part of the way the system operates, and then regulatory change. Those are the five big areas that I see people really focusing on.
Wow, so much to unpack there. And thank you for summarizing that so well. Starting with the first one, which is where EPM is expanding more broadly through the organization. Are there particular areas where that is most commonly happening?
You know, you do see it going operational. So you see a lot of things in terms of workforce. You see a lot of things in terms of supply chain. You know, if you're a higher ed institution, it's around students and what students are doing. So just think about what business you're in. And then that really is where a lot of the action is moving to right now, is how do you plan operationally, not just financially. So again, really depends upon the industry, really depends upon the size of the company, but we do see this moving out into other areas of the organization as a way to integrate the way you plan, both from a detail all the way up to a summarized financial view of your operations.
And would one of those new use cases also tie to what you said for number five, which is the regulatory reporting It sounds like that's becoming quite a more prominent use case. Would that be right?
It is, yes. You know, it's interesting that what gets people to move when it comes down to regulations is some, I'm going to use the word threat of enforcement. And I think in a lot of cases, one of the things that we see is that as governing bodies say, you have to do this, you have to be able to portray your operations with the guise towards environmental impact, let's say, then all of a sudden that becomes a required part of what you do. It's all over Europe right now. It's all over Asia Pacific. We're getting more of it in North America. The biggest example is rules in California, which tend to weigh very heavily on the North American market because California is such a large part of this. So I think one of the things we see is as these regulations become more standard and enforceable, then people are going to have to include this new information as part of how they operate. And just to keep in mind, this is not something that you can just tweak something you're already doing. This is a whole brand new source of information that has to be analyzed and reported on.
And the second one you talked about was silos of information that are starting to merge. How are companies going about making this happen? You know, you talked about the information architecture importance, and how have some of the most successful companies in doing that approached it?
A lot of it has to do with looking at this as an integrated planning issue. And when you plan a workforce, or when you plan your operations, or when you plan your supply chain, you can do all these wonderful models of how this operates. But then if it stops there, then for all intent and purpose, you're planning in detail, but not carrying that through to a higher level. And what we see is that people are saying, you know what, A connects to B, B connects to C. I said that before, and I really think it's very much about the idea of connections. So when it becomes part of the information architecture, it means that these connections are going to be instantiated in the data, not just in a logical way to think about them. So we see people saying, if I'm going to use this information holistically throughout my business, I need to be able to manage the information around it as well. So you're seeing models being combined and the data that supports those models being managed in a more centralized way rather than by department. So that to me is really where you start seeing this connection between operational planning and financial results kind of tying together, because you're seeing these things being modeled together and then being executed together.
So it sounds like EPM really is picking up steam then in terms of being so much more in that it's becoming full business planning, really. It's moving to the forefront, it sounds like.
That's the hope, and that's the plan for a lot of organizations. But this is one situation where the spirit is very willing, but the flesh could be a little bit weak. And we tend to see people say, in theory, this is what we want to get to, and some are executing towards that theory. But we also see people saying, you know, I'll get to it eventually, but I'm going to do it in pieces over time. So there's a stair-step maturity model that a lot of people go through. And I think that people are still in relatively early stages of maturity around enterprise performance management. But over time, you will see these connections being made and instantiated, and more importantly, being executed on an ongoing basis.
And the third one you talked about was how operational insight is moving to the forefront. And so how is that happening in companies? Are you seeing merging of the teams, or is there ways that they're increasing that collaboration across the business?
You know, one of the biggest challenges that companies in general say that they face when they're implementing an enterprise performance management scheme is they have a hard time getting all the right people together in the right at the right place at the right time to plan for this. What we do see is that there might be an overriding view of how they want to operate, but it still tends to get executed in pieces. So the people who manage workforce, they could be from the human capital group or could be hiring managers, they tend to look at the workforce piece of it. Supply chain managers tend to look at the supply chain aspects of it. Other operational areas such as student systems, let's say in higher ed, people who manage that will look at that. But when they are operating in unison, what happens is they start to say, when a change happens in workforce, it's going to have a financial impact. So the two will be linked together. When a change happens in supply chain, it's going to have a change impact in workforce. It's going to have a change impact in financials. So then all of a sudden, people are saying it is becoming an integrated planning story, and they still might operate in smaller pieces to get their individual requirements handled, but they look at it as a broader scope of how to manage the entire organization.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the only complete planning platform natively integrated with Microsoft 365. With Vena, your finance and operations team can maximize their productivity and efficiency to deliver data and insights to your whole business faster. Vena lets your team use the Microsoft apps they already know and love, like Excel and PowerPoint, while giving your business the power of scale through a robust centralized database and AI capabilities. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
And they still might operate in smaller pieces to get their individual requirements handled, but they look at it as a broader scope of how to manage the entire organization.
And so, and when you say moves to the forefront, can we unpack a bit more about what that means? Was it sort of behind the scenes before, and now is the approach people are taking at looking at it, or what do you mean by that?
You know, when I say move to the forefront, it means a lot of the attention is moving there. So I use the example of a maturity model before. And one of the things that implies is you might start in one place and then you add more to it and you add more to it and you broaden. I think what you're starting to see right now is as people move up that stair step of maturity, they're starting to say, operational planning and operational insights are critical for me to successfully manage my business, full stop. And in that way, what we're saying it's moving to the forefront is saying that people are spending more time looking at these operational areas to be able to make sure that they get the components in place so they can do a truly integrated plan and a true integrated performance management scenario. And that's where it's moving to the forefront, is the conversation is going outside of finance and being able to say what drives finance and then how do you tie them all together.
So is IT becoming a bigger player in that as well, when I think about sort of those more enterprise-wide systems thinking?
It is. IT is the unifying factor that underlies all of these different operational areas, and especially when it comes down to the data, IT plays an important role. That's, as I mentioned earlier about the information architecture, that was really what I was trying to get at, is that IT is going to be stepping in and helping model the data more holistically rather than having each department do their own thing. So you do see IT stepping in as a way to help, not to take over, but as a way to help these systems become more effective. I'll also say that you will see IT stepping in when it comes down to AI, because people want to be able to have AI componentry that's reusable across the enterprise, not just within one application. So you'll see more IT involvement, especially as it comes down to AI-related things as well.
Well, and AI was the fourth one that you mentioned, in that it continues to march on and gain some more acceptance. What are some of those areas where it's starting to gain acceptance? And similarly, where is there still some hesitation?
The places where it's really been most accepted is in terms of the machine learning aspect of it, which is how do I put together and employ algorithms to drive better forecasting. You know, when people do forecasting right now, they say, yeah, we're going to do 10% more next year, and that's the level of their forecast. But machine learning will really allow for the fact that you can use data-based calculations to drive what performance will really be. So I think that's an area that people accept it and say, this is a great place for it. When it comes down to generative AI, the ability to use text as a way to both describe what's going on as well as interact with data, there is a little bit more skepticism. People love the idea of being able to ask a question in natural language and get an answer back. So don't have to put into a query tool where department equals X and budget variance is over 1,000. People want to say, show me any place where this organization has significant budget variances greater than 1,000. And then just by saying that or typing it, the system can interpret that and give you back an answer. I think that really opens up performance management data to a much broader range of people, because what you're saying is anybody can ask a question. And it's not just a question in English. It can be a question in French. It can be a question in German, in Spanish, and whatever. So the idea is using natural language in someone's own natural language as a way to interact with the data. So people like that, but there's a little skepticism about, will you really get the right answer when you do that?
Well, and that's where I think the humans come into play, right? The humans need to understand how this is working and then be able to train the models, interpret, know if it's if the data coming out is not what you need, understand what kinds of questions even that are being asked by the business so that you can make sure that you're helping train it and increase the relevancy there.
You're absolutely right. I think that's really where the human does come in. And so that's there is some skepticism to say, should this really be done without a human governor on top of it? And I think that a lot of people are saying for the time being, humans still need to be involved to make sure information is managed in the right way. There is one more thing I wanted to say about AI. And when you talk to a lot of people in finance, they spend a lot of their time doing narratives. Why is this the way it is? Or what does this really mean? And this is where generative AI can come in, where it can actually start to explain what's going on. And when finance people see that, You see twinkles in their eyes, and because they say, this is where I spend a lot of my time, and I want to be able to, in essence, do other things rather than just do that kind of stuff. And we see generative AI being used as a way to build these narratives. Just like before, you wouldn't necessarily want those narratives to be automatically created without anybody looking at them. But if you can get 75 or 80% of the way there, that's a huge productivity gain for a lot of people who do a lot of this writing on a monthly and quarterly basis.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that freeing up our time and being able to then feel like we're adding even more and more value to our businesses, that's what makes the job exciting. We just have Great. To get to our comfort zone on it, I think. And we're in the early innings for sure.
Absolutely.
So the last one you talked about was regulation and how regulation is also driving new investment. Are there particular one or two top areas where this is true?
There are. A lot of times what people have is they need to know about the sustainability aspects of what they do. And this is not locked into only certain industries, but you see it more where people are producing a lot of the goods that they're selling. So the manufacturers, they need to know that the information, they can capture information about where the materials are sourced from, where they ethically sourced. Have they gone through an appropriate validation that, for example, no child labor has been used to build this kind of stuff? So you see scenarios where people who are makers of goods need to understand the whole environmental and social aspect of what they're doing. So in terms of recycling, in terms of the ability to know whether or not a product is being created ethically, et cetera. You also have to extend that out to other environments, so organizations who just distribute and maybe even sell, so like retailers. Retailers have to be able to know what their suppliers are doing. So these are the kind of things that we see a lot of stuff around ESG, environmental, social, and governance issues. These are coming to the forefront now as regulations are being put in place to say this needs to be reported on.
So with all of these trends, which they're all exciting ones, and it's a lot really when I sit back and reflect on the magnitude of change that's happening and feels like there's urgency with it. How is this impacting the way businesses are looking at EPM investments?
You know, what they look at now is more than just a way to build a budget. I think in the early days, that was what the primary use case was. And, you know, frankly, a lot of people say, hey, my first thing I need to do is to instantiate that yearly budget so I know what I'm shooting for. But increasingly, what we see organizations looking at, even in the forefront, is how do I tie together both operational and financial plans so I have a model for how my business operates? So that's really changed the way a lot of organizations are evaluating enterprise performance management software. And I think it also definitely has a difference in regards to people who've already implemented enterprise performance management but want to expand it. So they're looking to say, how do I go beyond it? So in some cases, people are saying, I may have already chosen an EPM solution, but I need to augment it with additional EPM technology, or I need to think about replacing what I've already done. So that tends to be one of those areas where people are saying it's not just a buy it once and use it. This is buy it once and potentially use it in many different use cases across the business.
So is this in one of the top areas of investment then for most businesses that you're, from what you've seen?
What we've seen, it's really in the top five. In fact, it's number three. So EPM investments are number three in terms of what people are really spending a lot of their time on. And that to me says a lot when it's that high up in the priority of an enterprise.
Absolutely. So based on what you're seeing, what top three pieces of advice would you give to CFOs who are looking to try to stay ahead of the curve?
The first piece of advice is don't think of this as strictly a financial solution. Think of it as a business solution. So CFO, you need to get the right people involved in the process. I think the second thing I would say is you need to look at this as part of your information architecture in the long term to be able to really drive the right level of performance throughout your business. These things are all tied together. So think of it as the capstone that sits on top of your business to really help steer where you want to go. And the third thing is about AI. Don't fear AI. Embrace AI, but use it pragmatically. And it's going to really make you more productive and at the same time also hopefully make you more accurate. And I think that's one thing that everyone wants is as much 2020 foresight and not just 2020 hindsight.
I think that's great advice. Now, as you look ahead, where do you think you'll be focusing and what areas are you keeping an eye on?
Absolutely looking at AI and the impact of AI going forward. This is something that we have monitored for the last 6 years, and we see a steady march up in terms of acceptance. We want to see, will it continue to do that steady march, or will you start to see the hockey stick where it will start to take off in a very big way? So AI is number one. Number two, really getting into these operational planning areas more in detail. Since a lot of the buyers of EPM software tends to start in finance, I think it's easy for researchers to focus on finance, but I think it's important that we look more broadly. So we'll be looking to a lot of more of these operational areas. And the third area is very much around this ESG, the environmental, social, and governance. What impact will that really have? And in some cases, we have to watch the regulatory landscape in order to determine where that ends up, because the more people are forced to do this, the more people will do it. And, you know, I've been around long enough to know the impacts of governance issues. And what I want to go back to is Sarbanes-Oxley in the U.S., which was, I hate to say, 20 years ago. But that really caused people to have to stop, take a deep breath, and then rethink what they did. And if I were to say, where will we be in the next few years in regards to ESG, environmental, social, and governance issues, I think we could be in a similar situation as that becomes more of how organizations need to portray their operations to the outside world.
John, thank you so much for sharing your insights today. Now, whenever we have a guest on, we do have two rapid fire questions that we like to ask. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
The first one is, what do you see as the hallmark of mature financial organizations in terms of how they operate?
They think holistically. I think that one of the key things that I've seen is that finance organizations who don't look at their role as controlling the business, but look at their role as guiding and managing the business, those are the ones that I view as being much more highly effective and also much more forward-looking.
And the second one, what is your go-to to stay productive during the workday?
So as soon as we finish up this recording, I'm going to go outside for a walk. So one of the things that I view as remaining productive is to step away from my computer, go out, get some fresh air, and then come back in and go at it.
Well, I hope it's a beautiful day there where you are so that it's a nice walk.
It certainly is. Very good.
Excellent. John, thanks again. Always like to hear Dresner's insight. You're very much on top of what's happening in the space. So thank you for spending your time today to share that with our audience.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, sign up for our free newsletter, where each week you'll get a roundup of exclusive resources designed to help you grow your leadership skills and drive strategic transformation across your business. Visit thecfoshowpodcast.com to sign up now. For The CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.